It's almost Memorial Day. We're getting you ready for the holiday today. First, we're speaking with The Bunker, a Chicago-based organization helping veterans start their own businesses.
My theory is that if we catalyze high-performing veterans, help them build businesses, help them create wealth for themselves and for their companies, they are going to translate veteran impact. They are going to hire veterans. They're going to support veteran causes. They're going to change the conversation for veterans.
Plus, millions of Americans are expected to hit the road this weekend, a near record amount. We'll speak with a mom blogger who has some advice for those of you traveling with small children.
Prepare for road trip. Know where some great stops might be, where you need a break, where the kids need a break, and getting your preparation ahead is the most important thing.
And as we've done all week, we've got the latest from the State House in Springfield. That's all this hour on the 21st. Stay tuned. Welcome to the 21st. I'm Nyla Boodoo. We've got a great show for you today to get you ready for the Memorial Day weekend. We've got travel tips for parents on road trips, and we know there's still a lot going on with state lawmakers, so we're going to do a quick check-in on what's going on in the State House in Springfield later on in the hour. Memorial Day on Monday is a reminder that's not just a day off and a time for barbecues and celebrating the beginning of summer, but it's also a day to honor those who gave their lives in military service to this country. That's why today we thought we would focus on veterans for part of our program. And we're going to start with The Bunker. They're a Chicago-based organization based at the 1871 Startup Hub and Merchandise Mart. They've got a business incubator that focuses on helping veterans who are also entrepreneurs. The Bunker's headquarters have recently expanded to 9 other locations across the country. Joining us from the Bunker Labs in Chicago, Justin Walker is its executive director. Hey, Justin, welcome to the 21st.
Hi, thank you for having me.
And on the phone from Philadelphia, Daniel Tobin is a co-founder of StarchUp, a Chicago-based company. He is also working out of Philadelphia these days. Hey, Daniel, welcome to the 21st.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Justin, maybe can you explain what's the background of Bunker Labs? When did you guys get started and what's your mission?
Kicked off in June of 2014 up here in Chicago in Site 1871, like you had mentioned. And the goal all along has just been to help military veterans start and grow their businesses by providing various access to people and resources, access to programs and initiatives that allow them to move forward in their endeavors.
And you put veterans who applied, can they apply to be part of the incubator? And then what kind of support do they get from you all when they get accepted?
So we have several different programs. One of them is a 14-week-long program that they will apply to, and we check to make sure that they have the ability, the right attitude. We'll meet with them and make sure that they've got the desire, really, and the acumen to move forward. And then we'll take them on board for the trip for 14 weeks to take them down the road of getting their mindset right and giving them the business development topics that they need in order to move them forward.
Do you find that there are specific challenges or maybe even specific benefits for veterans who want to start their own businesses?
I think there are a lot of challenges. The main one specifically is that as soon as you transition out of the military, it's very difficult. It's almost like moving to a new location without anybody there that you know. It's kind of like going to a new school. You know, you're just kind of the new person in town. And you've got to build that network, and the Bunker Labs provides an opportunity for an individual or group of individuals to do that, to have access to everything it is that they need and all the people that they need to meet in order to be successful.
Daniel, I wonder if you can describe StarchUp for us. What kind of company is it?
Yeah, so we are a SaaS platform that allows local businesses, mainly laundry businesses, provide an Uber-like experience to their customer base. So basically, we give them technology that they wouldn't otherwise be able to build themselves. And we allow like local dry cleaners, laundry services, and eventually any small business to compete on the on-demand mobile economy.
Now, Daniel, I know you've got a pretty expansive background. You're not just a veteran. You served in Iraq, but you also are a graduate of the University of Illinois, University of Chicago Law School. What led you to wanting to start your own business?
I'm a high-risk-seeking individual, as you can see from my background. So always kind of want to take the risk and try to do something a little bit bigger, more grandiose than a lot of other people, but mainly it was something that I've always wanted to do. I've had an entrepreneurial spirit since I was a young kid, And, you know, luckily I was able to find a co-founder who kind of had that same impetus in one of my law school classmates. And we always knew that we'd want to build our own thing and not necessarily go in and work for somebody else every day. You know, the military kind of helped kind of plant that seed. The military is a very structured environment, and it helped me kind of understand that while that's great and I could thrive in that environment, I kind of wanted something a little bit different, and I wanted to have control of my life and be my own boss. So that's basically why I set out to be an entrepreneur.
And I know you were one of the first businesses that were incubated at the Bunker when they first got started. What kind of resources did they offer you? How did it make a difference for you?
Well, it made a great difference to us. So outside from it being kind of a heuristic for competence, you know, the Bunker does a really good job of making sure that the companies that participate in the program are companies that are serious about building something and getting a product to market. But they also provide you with a very collaborative environment full of like-minded individuals with similar past experiences. You know, the best example for me is my move from Chicago to Philadelphia. We came to Philadelphia because my wife is a fellow at the Children's Hospital here. So the company had started in Chicago. We were one of the first Bunker companies in Chicago. And when we transitioned to Philadelphia, the Bunker in Philadelphia was just starting off. So I came to Philadelphia with absolutely no professional network following, you know, my wife's career path. And while having to deal with, you know, working remotely from Chicago, having the Bunker Philly kind of made me hit the ground running. You know, I had Mike Mara, who's the director of the Bunker Philly here, put me in touch with, you know, everybody in Philadelphia in the startup and tech community. I was able to get myself, you know, integrated. They gave me office space here in Center City in Philadelphia. It allowed me to have meetings. It basically, you know, gave me the entire underlying support system that I would need to, you know, credibly run a business from a city I just got to.
That's Daniel Tobin. As you said, he started his business in Chicago, as you heard him just say. He's the co-founder of StartUp. We're on the line with him and talking to him about veteran-owned businesses. My guest as well is Justin Walker. He's the executive director of the Bunker Labs. Justin, how 1871 is sort of known for being an innovation startup hub in Chicago. There's lots of entrepreneurs. It's in Merchandise Mart, where a lot of tech companies are now located. How does that physical location help the veteran entrepreneurs who are involved with the Bunker?
Well, it's been absolutely added a tremendous amount of value to allow everybody to just get connected. I mean, you don't want to just take veterans and just put them in a room with other veterans and just leave them there and expect them to be able to network with other people throughout the city. So by being at 1871, which is one of the most collaborative places in the city of Chicago, to include people from corporations, to include people from political roles, like everybody comes into this space and just rotates through. So it gives veterans an opportunity to not only network with other veterans who are like-minded and collaborating on different processes and ideas, it allows them to network with civilians and the public in a different way as well, and take in their ideas and be surrounded in a very active environment and just absorb an immense amount of information from everybody around them. And then again, getting access to other successful individuals in entrepreneurship and other successful business people from, you know, Fortune 500 companies, you know, all the way down to, you know, the newest startup guy that walks in the door. So it gives them just a ton of exposure to all the right people.
So exposure to, right, to angel investors, to capital, the actual physical space to work in, as well as all of these other things you're talking about. What was behind you guys' idea to expand to other cities? Did you feel like it had gone so well in Chicago, you wanted to be able to expand? And where did you pick those locations to expand to?
Well, that was there was a lot of Todd's idea. He's our CEO, and when he had talked about getting this all started, a lot of the other individuals that were kind of, you can say, they're in the room at the right time, or, you know, hearing about this idea and Todd's personal network, other people in other cities said, "Hey, I want to take this on. I want to do this." And we're like, "Well, it's a ton of work," and we decided to try to lay out the resources on our website to give anybody really anywhere an opportunity to create a bunker. You can go to our resources page and just see exactly what you need to do. There's a timeline. There's a walkthrough. It shows you exactly what needs to get done. So a lot of the city leaders took on a ton of responsibility, and you really got to hand it to them. A lot of them did it, you know, with their own time, with their own money. And because, again, we are a nonprofit, we weren't able to financially support them, but they loved the idea so much that they dug into their own pockets, and they, you know, they're just super passionate about what we're doing and how to get it all out there into the world and to create the same type of network that we had up here in Chicago, to recreate that in other cities, to do exactly what happened with Dan, as he mentioned, you know, moving to Philly and just landing and hitting the ground running. That's exactly what we want to be able to create all across the nation. So no matter where you go or wherever you transition out of, you're going to have that network. But that's kind of how it started. It just kind of exploded almost immediately. And then now we're just trying to bolster each one of those cities with the help of J.P. Morgan Chase. It's just been a fantastic partnership that they've helped us continue with this Bunker Build America tour to grow.
And you talked about it's Bunker Labs, it's Bunker in a Box program, and that helps people in locations where you guys don't have physical offices to try to do this as well. Is that what that program is?
Absolutely, that's correct. It's an online gamified entrepreneurial experience, and it's completely free, and it's actually open to the public as well. You can sign up on it anytime you'd like. Log in with your Facebook. You can log in with LinkedIn. It provides a collaborative opportunity as well. You can communicate with everybody else that jumps on there. There's a leaderboard. Again, like I said, it's gamified. So everything you do in the program gives you experience points, and then you can earn ribbons just like you did in the military. And it goes through the 14-week program that we teach up here in Chicago, minus the subject matter expert interactive workshops that we're able to do in person up here. So, but it gives everything else as much as we can, and we're actually looking to bolster that program up a lot more here in the near future as well, which we're pretty excited about.
We've tweeted out those links, by the way. If you follow 21st Show on Twitter, that's 21ST Show. We've got all those links that Justin's talking about. Justin and Dan, I would love you to weigh in after Justin answers this. How is your process different from other business incubators that maybe don't focus on veterans?
I think it's that the primary focus is on the founder. So when we rebranded from the Bunker Incubator, we started out as the Bunker Incubator, and in June of last year, we rebranded to Bunker Labs. And that's because we really felt that the entrepreneur is more of a scientist, and you're just testing an idea. You're testing a hypothesis. So we figured, why don't we create a program that actually creates a better scientist, instead of just focusing on an experiment that could be going one way or the other. So our primary focus is on the veteran and on the founder. The secondary focus is on the venture itself. And then the third focus is to get them networked within the Bunker Labs community.
Dan, do you feel like you might have had a different experience at other if you started this in a program that wasn't veteran focused?
Well, yeah, definitely. And, I would add to that that there is a very different incentive structure in the Bunker Labs than there is in other incubators or accelerators. You know, the Bunker doesn't take a percentage of the company, and their main interest is in returning and a return to investors. They're really just invested in developing you as an individual, and in that process, helping you develop your idea in your company. You never feel that, that they're just doing something, you know, in order to make sure that they recoup whatever monetary investment that they have in you. You know, the mentorship's there because they are genuinely interested in helping you grow your business.
And Dan, you said before that you were a risk taker, and I think that's certainly a skill that all startups and entrepreneurs know really well. I wonder if there are other commonalities you think, or if there are skills that transfer. And I think so often when we talk about veterans leaving the military and leaving active duty, we talk about what skills transfer. And for you, I wonder, were there skills that transferred from your military experience to running a business now?
Yeah, 100%. And I touched upon this on an interview I did a few weeks ago with another medium. It's basically, you know, the ability to work in a high stress environment with small teams in low information, kind of high risk, high reward environments, right? Being able to think on your feet, being able to handle a lot of problems under high stress very dynamically, while kind of still keeping your head and making sure that you stay, you know, kind of on the objective. I think that's the most general but most transferable skill that people from the military come. You know, losing a client is far less stressful than, you know, getting shot at or reacting to indirect fire. So when you come with that kind of level-headedness to solve a set of problems that a startup would have, you kind of tend to take things, a little more easily and methodically than other people who haven't been exposed to those environments.
Dan, I know your father's the operations manager for a large corn-operated laundry chain in the Midwest. Did that help inspire Starch Up?
Yeah, absolutely. That's what really got me into the industry. We saw like all these big tech companies coming out from the East and West Coast that were basically trying to, quote unquote, destroy the laundry industry by inserting themselves at the technology level on top of, already existing businesses. My co-founder and I were of the mind that this was kind of the wrong way to go about it, because you had a, nationwide kind of chain of small business owners that took great pride in what they were doing. They just didn't have the ability or the money to build the tools that would allow them to compete with these larger tech companies. So we wanted to do that for them. We wanted to provide those tools to local businesses to allow them to compete with these much more well-funded, more tech-savvy businesses that were coming into disruptor industry.
Justin, really quickly, we've just got about 30 seconds left, but who can use Bunker Services, Bunker Labs? Is it limited to veterans?
We do have one program that is open to the public, but everything else is pretty much specific, veteran specific. The main one we have is a weekly brain trust, and then which happens every Thursday. It's a 3-hour program from 9 a.m. to noon up here in Chicago. And then the EPIC program is actually the Entrepreneurial Program for Innovation and Collaboration is now open as well to the public too.
Thanks so much for that. Justin Walker is the executive director of the Bunker Labs in Chicago. Thanks also to Daniel Tobin. He's co-founder of Starch Up, which he started in Chicago and now is in Philadelphia. Thanks for being with me, guys.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for having us.
Coming up, we're going to continue this conversation with two other entrepreneurs. Stay tuned to the 21st.
The 21st is made possible by the Library at the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign, supporting librarianship and the training of librarians, instructing instructors as they embed the library into classrooms and beyond the campus across the globe. The University Library at Illinois.
Welcome back to the 21st. I'm Nyla Boodoo. We've been talking to veteran business owners who've been helped along by the Bunker Labs. That's a Chicago-based nonprofit based at the 1871 Startup Hub that's also a business incubator. The Bunker Labs headquarters are still in Chicago, but now they have 9 other locations across the country. Let's go now to Kirby Atwell. He's joining us from Mokena. He's the founder of iCandy Homes, and also Mindy Kniebel, who's the co-founder and executive director of Kaizen Health, both of them entrepreneurs affiliated with the Bunker. Hey, Kirby. Hey, Mindy.
Hello.
Hey, good morning.
Morning. Kirby, let's start with you. What's iCandy Homes? Tell us about the company.
Sure. Yeah. So iCandy Homes is a redevelopment company, mostly residential redevelopment in throughout Chicago. And we also teach others how to do it and partner with them on deals as well.
And Mindy, Kaizen Health, I understand you all arrange rides for non-emergency health care for folks. What inspired you to start that business?
Yeah, two family things, actually. My mom's sister has MS and is living in a nursing home Monday through Friday, not because she needs full-time care, but because she does need physical therapy, and there's no affordable, reliable transportation for her. I grew up in Northwest Iowa, and that's where she is. And then also around the same time that that happened, my mother-in-law here in the Chicagoland area was diagnosed with stage 4 breast cancer. And, it really hit home twice. Trying to get people to and from, their healthcare appointments was a real struggle, whether it was in a rural or urban area.
Kirby, I wanted to ask you about, as both of you were talking about your businesses, I wanted to ask you guys about the challenges of it, but I wanted to start also by asking about, Kirby, I know you have your background in the military. I wonder if you could tell us about that and how you feel like that translated to your experience now with iCandy.
Yeah, sure. I went to West Point and graduated in 2005, and I think that was kind of the foundation. You know, it's a pretty intense environment, and you sort of learn just how to schedule your time, how to prioritize, how to problem solve, all of the characteristics or skills that are really important as an entrepreneur as well. So, you know, you learn that at West Point, and then you utilize that while you're in the military. I served 6 years as an officer after that in the Army, and got to use it every day, managing people and managing my team. And so it was just a easy, for me, it was a easy transition into the from the military into the entrepreneurial world with having that that background.
Mindy, how did the bunker help Kaizen? How is it helping you guys right now?
Sure. Yeah, I have actually been in the startup world for a long time. I've been part of 5 startups prior to having my own. And although I had a lot of business operations experience in several different industries, I never had my own baby, right? So the bunker was, you know, very much a confidence building. It was great for connections and great for sort of guiding you through some of the very earliest stages that I had not yet experienced.
What are the biggest challenges for you, especially, I'm thinking, Mindy, you've been involved in other startups before. What's the biggest challenge for you now as an entrepreneur?
The biggest challenge now is, you know, all of my team, we're up to 12 team members now, excuse me, are relying on me to be able to feed and clothe their families. Mm. And that's a real responsibility that I don't take lightly. We have a lot of great things that we're doing to help, you know, public health and help the community, but that weighs equally with me with, you know, making sure that I'm taking care of my team.
Kirby, how about for you? What's the biggest challenges you found so far for iCandy?
Well, I think it started with myself and two partners. And so as we've grown, I think a challenge with a lot of entrepreneurs and definitely for us has been just keeping the priorities straight. You know, it's very easy to get sidetracked with all kinds of opportunities that are out there, and staying focused on the core of what we're doing. For us, it's, you know, rehabbing houses and making sure we've got new deals coming in and we've got the machine turning out what is really the product that we're after, as opposed to chasing down a new opportunity every week that pops up. You know, you got to learn to say no to a lot of opportunities so that you can capitalize on one or two here and there.
Do either of you guys feel like it's particularly challenging to be running a business now in Illinois, given the current budget situation? We hear from so many business owners that the lack of a state budget and other things kind of are not really helping the business climate here. I wonder if either of you have been affected by that.
We certainly have. It's been a positive and a negative thing, frankly. It's made us hone in our business model a bit more. But working with the VA and Medicaid and Medicare is more difficult without a state budget, for sure.
Mm-hmm. Kirby, how about for you?
Yeah, we haven't noticed the lack of state budget as much on our company. I mean, obviously, high taxes in the Chicago area is a difficulty. You know, we're buying sometimes in some areas where the pricing still has not recovered very much from 2008, but yet the taxes on a house that you can pick up for $30,000-$40,000 are, you know, $6,000-$7,000 a year, and it just doesn't make any sense. And, you know, it's kind of a result of lack of capital.
Yeah. Here's my last question for both of you. Kirby, I don't know if you want to start. What advice do you have for veterans who might be thinking about starting their own business?
Yeah, I mean, definitely. I started with the bunker about a year and a half ago, and that year following 2015 was our biggest year, and a lot of it was due to the community and the resources that I got from the bunker. So surrounding yourself with a community of people who share that similar background, that similar training, you're already on kind of a understanding or a even playing field, I guess, with the other people in the group, and it's just a great way to lift you up when you're having rough days and support some of the other people in the group as well.
This is Kirby Atwell. He's the founder of iCandy Homes, joining us from Mokena. I want to thank him as well as Mindy Kniebel, co-founder and executive director of Kaizen Health. Thanks for being with me, guys.
Thanks very much.
Have a wonderful day.
Thanks, you too. You're listening to The 21st. We were just talking about the state budget or lack thereof. There's been a flurry of activity among lawmakers in both the House and Senate in Springfield. Big question, of course, remains, will we actually get a budget out of all of these back and forths? Here's where we're at. Late Wednesday night, House Democrats rushed through a 500-page budget. House Republicans decried the process as barely democratic. So yesterday, they took a vote again on the budget. On this round of voting, a few more Democrats dropped out of approving Speaker Madigan's plan, although it did pass. And yesterday, several key Chicago Democrat lawmakers criticized that plan because of its $7 billion shortfall between expenses and revenues. So where are we standing today? Lawmakers are up against a May 31st deadline. Of course, we could see a budget deal after that, but procedural rules would make that more difficult for lawmakers to pass a budget after next Tuesday. Joining me to discuss the latest from Springfield, the Associated Press's State House correspondent, Ivan Moreno. Hey, Ivan.
Hey, how's it going? Thank you for having me.
Thanks for being here. On the line from Chicago, Paris Schutz is a WTTW politics reporter for Chicago Tonight. Hey, Paris, welcome to the 21st.
Hey, Nyla. Hey, thanks. Good to be here.
Ivan, what's the latest today? What's going on right now in the Capitol?
Well, actually, as we speak, several Republican lawmakers in the House are getting up to talk, to plead with Democrats to continue negotiations, to try to come together and find a solution to the stalemate. And their comments come about a couple of hours after the legislative leaders met with the governor. They've been meeting all of this week, every day, to try to find a solution. And yesterday, the Republican leaders felt like they had a positive meeting, that things were moving along with these working groups that are trying to get a budget compromise with some of the pro-business legislation that Rauner wants. House Speaker Mike Madigan said after the meeting that just happened a couple of hours ago that basically there's been not a lot of progress, and he said that the governor continues to fail to persuade. So that really gave Republicans an indication that there is probably not going to be a budget deal, but again, they're trying to get something done here in the next few days, and again, they're pleading with Democrats to come together. But it based on what Madigan said, it looks like he's not moving from his position, and Rauner is certainly not moving from his position. So
Ivan, he's not moving, right? But I know there are some people who have moved among the rank and file Democrats, because the initial vote on Wednesday was 63-53 in favor of Speaker Madigan's budget, and when they retook the vote yesterday, a couple more votes dropped out from there. Correct.
Yes, but to me, it's not clear if those people had changed their mind or if they actually never intended to vote on that budget in the first place. One of the reasons why they redid the vote again was because Republicans had asked for a verification of the vote to make sure that everyone who voted in favor was actually in their seats. The implication being that some of the people who voted yes the first time actually were not the ones who pressed the yes button. So, to me, it's not clear whether those people actually dropped off and changed their mind, or if they never really intended to vote on it in the first place. But again, Madigan is very firm in his belief that Rauner is not being persuasive, and that he is not going to do the things that Rauner wants. You know, things that would curb the power of unions make business climate here more friendlier to companies. So it almost feels like nothing really has changed since last year, really.
So that's Ivan's perspective on feeling about, in terms of how you think things have changed. Paris, I wonder what we saw. We saw yesterday some Chicago Democrats, I'm thinking of Senator Heather Staines and Kwame
Right.
Raoul, they were pretty outspoken against Speaker Madigan. What did they say?
Well, I mean, they said that the budget was fantasy. They said that they weren't so pleased with the process of introducing it at the last minute and then voting on it almost right away without members really understanding what was in it, and the fact that the governor's budget director says it's $7 billion out of whack. It's very clear that it's a spending plan with no way to pay for it. And what you didn't hear from was Senate President John Cullerton, who's Madigan's longtime friend, but it's unclear whether he's going to call it in the Senate, whether it's going to have the votes to pass in the Senate. And it does seem like there are Democrats, mostly in the Senate, but perhaps in the House too, that do feel the working groups were making progress and that some of the things on the turnaround agenda have been whittled down to a point where they really aren't difficult things to agree on. Politically, it's much better to say no and stand up and wait until the elections and see what interest groups respond to that. But from a policy perspective, the things that the place that they had gotten to, according to some Democrats that I talked to, really isn't that contentious of a place. And it seems like politics really is the thing that's holding up any kind of final compromise on that.
And Parrish, yesterday we also saw Chicago Public Schools' Forrest Claypool in Springfield rallying people. What have you heard and what did he say about taking this to the brink? As you said, if there's not a budget, there's no funding for K-12 schools to open this fall. What were his comments about that?
Well, I mean, his comments were they are walking off the cliff right now. And CPS has said this for years and years and years. But, you know, you look at a $1 billion deficit in a school system that takes in about $6 billion in revenue. Certainly it's a deficit that can't really be managed without significant new revenue and reorganization. And so, you know, I believe that the appropriations bill proposed by the House offered $400 million more from the state for CPS, and even that isn't going to be enough. I mean, CPS is still going to have to look at instituting a new Chicago property tax levy. It's going to have to get significant concessions out of the teachers' union on the so-called pension pickup, where the city has been paying for a large chunk of teacher pension contributions. So even in this quote-unquote fantastical budget, it's still not enough to save CPS.
Wow. Okay. Ivan, I see the governor just announced a news conference with the head of the Office of Management and Budget. I don't know if you've seen that, what you think that's about.
Well, they're going to give an explanation of what could happen. What are the consequences of the legislature not being able to pass a budget for next fiscal year, which begins July 1st. Obviously, the state has never been in this position where they've had a standoff over a budget for nearly a year. So in some ways, we're kind of in an uncharted territory here. But one thing to keep in mind is most of the state spending is still happening. It's just the problem with it is that it's on autopilot. About 90% of state government is being funded on autopilot, and it's being funded at last year's income tax rate, which was higher. So really, every month that goes by, the state is going further into debt. So he might touch on that a little bit, and also talk about what might be further impacts to higher education and social service programs, which are not covered under this mandatory spending through the court orders that is covering most of the budget at the moment.
Right. And we haven't heard word yet as to whether Governor Rauner will sign the stopgap funding measure that was passed for social service agencies earlier. Ivan, what's happening in the next few days? Are they recessing for Memorial Day? When are lawmakers scheduled to be back?
Well, they are working today, and they are off on Saturday. They come back late Sunday afternoon, and then they are here Monday and Tuesday until possibly, you know, midnight or however long it takes to get their work done, and then they adjourn.
All right. Well, that's Ivan Moreno. I know you're going to be working through this Memorial Day weekend, covering everything with the AP. He's their State House correspondent. Thanks also to Chicago Tonight's politics reporter at WTTW, Parrish Schultz. Thanks for being with us, guys.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Coming up, we'll be providing some tips for all of you parents who maybe are dreading the road trips or plane trips you have ahead for Memorial Day weekend. Stay tuned. We've got a panel designed to help you out.
The 21st is made possible by Kester & Bradley, LLP, providing legal services to the Urbana-Champaign community and Illinois residents since 1895. Kester & Bradley's attorneys are committed to achieving the best results for their clients. More information is available at KesterLawLLP.com.
Big Ben,
Carlin, again. Yes.
We know, Big Ben.
Carlin.
Doesn't that bring back memories? I'm Nyla Boodoo. You're listening to The 21st. That was one of our favorite scenes from National Lampoon's European Vacation. We know this weekend marks the beginning of the summer travel season. AAA is estimating a near record number of Americans are going to be hitting the road this Memorial Day. We've been documenting all the issues with Chicago's major airports and the hassles people are facing with TSA for flights there. So this next conversation is for parents with young kids who may be already stressed out by just even the thought of traveling. We've convened some people here to help you out. In studio with me, Laura Blyle is the mom-in-chief of ShampanaMoms.com. It's an online magazine for the greater Champaign-Urbana area. She's the mom of three kids, age 4, 7, and 10. Thanks for being with us, Laura.
Thanks for having me.
Also in studio with us, Kimberly Chronic is one of my colleagues here. She's the director of community content and engagement at Illinois Public Media and the mom of a 2-year-old. Kimberly, thanks for joining us.
You're
as
welcome.
Well. On the line with us from Chicago is Taylor Wood. She's a blogger for Motherhood What? And she lives with her toddler, dog, cat, and husband in Uptown. Hey, Taylor. Thanks for being us with on the 21st, too. Taylor. Okay, looks like we're working on getting Taylor. Laura, let's start with you. What tips do you have for taking road trips with young kids?
Well, I take a lot of road trips with my kids. In fact, I was the mom who everyone made fun of when we bought a minivan when our daughter was 6 months old and we had one kid. But, you know, we had the dog, too. So, you know, she counts. But as far as tips go, my biggest tips are really to be organized, which is something that I strive to be every day. But be organized, be prepared, but also be flexible and be prepared for what you're not prepared for.
Well, and I think when you say be prepared, I think one of the genesis of us thinking about having this conversation is, I think for a lot of parents or for myself as an aunt, I always do think prepared means just have a device that you can like give your child or niece or nephew. And I know people have, there's lots of course, the American Academy of Pediatrics has very clear guidelines about screen times for kids under the age of 2. Kimberly, how do you handle that?
Yeah, that's great. Well, I do like those guidelines and we do use them. And so they say, you know, 2 and up, an hour to 2 screen time, total screen time, whether it's television, a tablet, a phone. And so, first of all, when we travel with our daughter, she's 2 and 2 months, we build in extra time. So we...
Right, do you just blow that rule out of the water, in other words?
Well, we build extra time to make stops, right? You know, to stops at the rest stops and play in the playgrounds. But we do have devices. She loves, because she sees us using the phone, right? So she wants to do what mommies are doing. And so she can go to the PBS Kids app and she can find Daniel Tiger, the video, and she can find Peg Plus Cat. And those are the shows that we watch with her, and we read books that are related to the shows. And there's no commercials on them. So I feel okay about when the interaction, the person to person and the reading the stories fails, we give her the phone and she can find something that's good for her, and we don't worry about it.
So you were talking about building in extra time for getting to your destination, not building in extra screen time necessarily,
exactly.
Right?
Just that's to a be good clear. Right.
Right. Laura, how do you handle this?
Well, one of the best tips that I think, and actually this was a tip on Champaign Moms, I think on our Facebook page, was parents who use technology of a different sort. So audiobooks. Audiobooks for kids have really grown in recent years, and it's a great way to use something that's where everybody can get involved with it. Of course, you know, screens can be very individualized, but everyone can listen, and you can find such a variety of age-appropriate audiobooks. So that's one of our biggest tips. We also just love to listen to music. music and sing along and have fun with it in our car as well, when to keep the kids off the devices. I think because our families live so far away from us and we're constantly on the road, my kids have just come to associate road trips with not necessarily being on a device all the time.
Oh, that's great.
Because we do it all the time and we make them plan ahead on their own, as well as we help them, give them tools so that they have other things to do when we're on the road.
That's Laura Biles. She's the mom-in-chief of ShambanaMoms.com. Let's see if we've got Taylor Wood is a blogger for Motherhood What, and she was joining us from Chicago. Hey, Taylor, can you hear us now?
Hi, yeah. Can you hear me?
We can. So we're talking about, just to catch you up, we're talking about particularly car rides with kids and devices. What's your philosophy about that?
My general philosophy, and I think this is a parenting philosophy, is everything in moderation. You know, I think starting a habit of always having a screen as early as possible, they're going to always associate screen time with car time. And what if a battery dies? What if anything happens? You're probably going to be left with some sort of disaster on your hands. So I think having, like the other two women were saying, some alternatives and preparing and getting that habit started as early as possible where they don't have a screen is probably the best thing you can do, but also making sure that, especially for older kids, that they have a choice in the matter and helping them make sure that, you know, oh, do you want this coloring book or that coloring book? What, you know, what helps them is having an active say in the matter as well.
That's Taylor Wood on the line from Chicago. We've gotten comments from this on our Facebook page. If you search for the 21st, we'll keep compiling tips there. And you can tweet them as well right now if you want to a 21st show. But we had a comment for traveling by plane. This is a whole different ballgame from cars. And we got a comment on our Facebook page from Mary Yu. And she says if you're taking an international flight, always, of course, kind of check to see if the plane offers a bassinet with young children. But I think the key is also when you're packing for flights, she says you should always pack more in case there are delays. It's a pain carrying it around, but you don't want to get stuck without extra clothes, diapers, or baby food for very young children. Taylor, what else would you add to that for flights?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a great piece of advice. Is you don't ever want to be in a place where you do not have something that you desperately need. And I think that in that case, you really need to be able to have all of your extras, but be aware that, you know, for planes, you can typically check two baby items in addition to your other checked baggage. And so that might free up a lot of your hands, a lot of your arms, you know, so we typically do the car seat and the pack and play if we have to bring it and stroll around. And that stroller has a lot of extra storage underneath. So bringing all of those things, but also being aware of what you can check and potentially check for free, it helps a lot.
Yeah, that's great advice. Laura, what is your advice for in terms of plane travel? I wonder, do you think there's a culture of judgment around letting kids use electronics? Or if you're on a plane, people are happy that, like, you're handing a kid a device because they think, oh, they're going to be quiet.
I think there's a bigger culture of judgment of bringing kids on planes to begin with. I think that this whole idea that parents have to go on planes and give something to the people who are sitting around them to apologize is just preposterous. My child has every right and to be on that plane, especially now that I actually have to pay for their tickets. And no, we don't get any break on them. It's just appalling to me. So I do think, you know, of course, people want to see kids that are prepared. I do think that it really bugs people on planes if you don't bring, let's say, headphones for your kids while they're watching their devices. So, of course, be respectful of the people around you and be prepared. But I totally agree about having extras constantly, extra clothes, even extra clothes, something people don't think about for the parents, because I cannot tell you how many times I've been spilled on by my kids on a plane. So be prepared for that, too.
We got another comment from Susan Lee on our Facebook page. She says that, you know, using book bags or crossbody are really important, and also kind of know what airports offer play areas for kids or breastfeeding rooms for moms. Laura, I don't know if how much Google searches you do beforehand or if there are good resources for people on that front.
I think these days, most airports are really savvy about this. I mean, I would just spent a lot of time in O'Hare the other night and you know, was walking around. There's the yoga room and there's the children's area and there's the, you know, mother's room, et cetera. And so I think this has just become part and parcel of modern travel. And most websites are pretty good about this. I'm sure there are probably some really good resources individually. But I also, my go-to is just go to the actual website for that airport to find out.
Kimberly, I wonder if you think the advice, we've been talking a little bit about babies, but about toddlers with your daughter, she's two, if you have a hard time, that's a tough age to ask a child to sit still for an extended period of time.
Right. We're a little nervous. So she first flew when she was 3 months old, and her ninth flight will be this June when we fly to Denver. And the last flight she had was October, and we noticed the difference. It was a little bit harder to keep her engaged, and she was a little bit more antsy. Our flights tend to be 2 to 3 hours long, and that seems to work really well. She still breastfeeds, so every flight she's had, she's breastfed in the seat with us. So that helps a lot. It helps with the ears. She's still breastfeeding, so I'm sure that'll happen. Puzzles, games, you know, just checking the airline policies about breastfeeding. I think they all allow it, which is really helpful.
They do, but sometimes flight attendants, because I've had this situation personally with friends of mine where flight attendants have asked friends of mine to stop nursing their child.
Yeah, so we go unprepared. We know a good resource for that is the La Leche League, because they can help you do what you have a right to do. So we have never had anyone be negative about it. And we've flown on American. We've flown on Southwest. What I like about Southwest is we take up the two seats, and someone who wants to be with the kid and parents, then they sit next to us. So that's it's all. We've had no negative experiences, and we're about to go on our ninth flight.
That's an interesting thing with Southwest, because when you choose your flights, then I guess then theoretically people have a choice of whether or not they want to sit next to a child, too.
Exactly, yeah. Mm-hmm. And so it's been great.
Taylor, you know, I think when we think about, we started this conversation playing a clip from National Lampoon's European Vacation, kind of as a joke, but kind of not, because there was an era of when all of us were growing up, there wasn't really as many electronic devices you could whip out. And we had to, I mean, as a kid, there were games, or we actually had to talk to my parents when we were in the car driving across the country.
Sure.
Do you feel like parents these days might be too quick to turn to electronics to entertain their kids?
Yeah, I mean, I think we're too quick to turn to electronics for ourselves as well. You know, we it's hard pressed at a dinner table to sometimes not just pull out your phone to look something up real quick or check your email. And so I think it's a problem where we do it for ourselves and we do it for our kids too. So I think making an effort, making a pledge, but on the other hand, sometimes it does help. Sometimes it does calm those nerves, and it's a strange experience for kids. And if they're not really prepared, or they're not super comfortable being taken out of their comfort zone and stretch their limits, sometimes I think an electronic can help, but everything in moderation, and sometimes including moderation.
Laura, we've just got a minute left. Any final tips of advice for either road or car travel for this holiday season, for this weekend, and for the summer? And maybe even for people who don't have kids, as you're saying, maybe you have advice for them as well.
I think for road travel, just keep your sense of humor and have patience. You know, this is construction season is beginning. And so, all you know, you just never know what's going to happen. But when you're in the car, just keep a smile on your face and make it fun for your kids, and make it make a memory, as they say.
Kimberly?
I would just say that with technical devices, I just see it as another opportunity to share and interact with my child, and not something I need to be afraid of.
And what are you mentioned the PBS Kids app. That's obviously something you work with here.
Yes.
That's part of your job. But
yeah.
What other apps do you like to use? Or maybe you want to tell us about more.
Actually, that's it. She just has the PBS because she likes the show. She likes the books. There's no commercials. They're research-based. They're safe. They teach her things. They're fun. So I go for that. As she ages, I think we're going to have more restrictions and guidelines. But as the blogger said, involve her in those choices and just give her good choices to make.
So with that app, you have to bring books as well.
No, you don't have to. It's on the device. But I'm saying there's books that go with the app. There's shows that have the books. They have the dolls. They have the apps. They all go together. So there's always a conversation around and the app is just another conversation.
That's Kimberly Chronic. She's the Director of Community Content and Engagement. Thanks to here at Illinois Public Media. Thanks also to Laura Blyle. She's the Mom-in-Chief of ShambanaMoms.com. And on the line with us from Chicago, Taylor Wood, who blogs for Motherhood What. Thanks for being with me, guys. Have a safe and happy holiday weekend wherever you guys are traveling.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for having me.
That does it for us today. We're produced by Christine Herman, Austin Keating, and Travis Stansel. Technical direction comes from Jason Croft, with help today from Steve Mork. Scott Cameron is our news director. The 21st is a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm Nyla Boodoo. Thanks for listening. As we wish you a happy and safe holiday weekend, we wanted to leave you with a little music, like we like to do on Friday. Chicago artist Chance the Rapper's latest album, Coloring Book, has become the first streaming-only album to debut in the top 10 of the Billboard 200. It's been streaming on Apple Music, but it's available for release everywhere digital as of today. Here's one of our favorite tracks from the album, Angel. Here's Chicago's very own Chance the Rapper.
Angel. Nah, nah, nah. I got my city doing front flips when every father may a rapper jump ship. I guess that's why they call it where I stay. Clean up the streets so my daughter can have somewhere to play. I'm the blueprint to a real man. Some of these toss they tassel for a deal, man. I ain't going to hell or the hill, man. For my real fans. I got caught up with a Lil Xan. Couldn't stop me, but it slowed me, though. Yeah, famous, you don't know me, though. But their DJ still play me, though. Them, I don't even need the radio. Them, sound like a rodeo. Got the old folks dancing the do-si-do. So they round sound me the OVO. Ooh, I just might share my next one with Keith. Got the industry in disbelief. They be asking for beef. This what it sound like when God split an atom with me. I even had...